The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
So we say, we always say to Black Panther Party that they can do anything they want to do. We might not be back, I might be in jail, I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you can remember I said with the last words on my lips that I am a revolutionary.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have. Told you turn the other cheek and they met it with a bat. Fucking protesting them citizens. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, you died, good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around a pump crack right up when you did it. And they just turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. The one that you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today's date is February the 5th, 2016, on a Friday afternoon as we get ready to head into the weekend. And what is also known as Super Bowl weekend, as the NFL has its annual championship between the AFC and the NFC conferences. And Super Bowl Sunday, that is known as one of the most watched sporting events in, I guess you would say, television history, generating untold sums of money. And so with that in mind, I do have some commentary, sports related commentary, that I want to share with you. But before I do that, let me tell you what today's program agenda is about. The Democrats, and I didn't even know that they were going to have a debate last night between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, as those seem to be the only two people left in the race seeking the Democratic nomination. And they had a debate last night on MSNBC. And from some of the clips that I have seen, some of the commentary that I have heard, it pretty much had some substance last night. As some people say, the knives came out. And Hillary Clinton was put on the defensive last night to come up with a reasonable explanation as to why she getting paid all this money, or has been paid all this money, by Goldman Sachs. And certainly they aren't the only ones who've been paying her big time money, as well as her husband, Bill Clinton, former CEO of USA Inc., been paying them both big money just to give speeches. Now, she tried to defend herself. Well, actually, she tried to attack Bernie Sanders and say something like, you know, he's engaging in innuendos, and why, if he has something to say about all this money I'm raising and who I'm getting it from, why don't he just come out and say it? And the crowd, the people who were in the audience, did not like what she had to say about that. And so, you know, I always got to tie this in to black people, right? Okay, so anyway, most people who are engaged in the people activity of politics know that here in the United States, that is how the game is played, is you pay to play. You pay sums of money in order to get laws passed that are favorable to whatever industry that you're working in, to get appointments for family members to administration and whatnot. And so most people should know that's how the game is played. And so for her to even try to deny that these people just giving her money and not expecting nothing in return, well, most of those people, I would imagine that most people who go to these debates and are in the audience and whatnot, they are not your average everyday voter. All right. They're going through, you know, I would say extraordinary lengths to even go to such a event. That means that, you know, they're serious about politics. And so, you know, they try to engage the process on every level. And so, but my contention is that most black people do not know how the game is played. And that is why we keep losing in the game. And I'm talking about modern politics. I'm not talking about the 1800s after the Reconstruction of white supremacy in the South. And you had all these different black politicians who were being assassinated and black people were being terrorized at the polls and whatnot. No, I'm not talking about those people, which also brings to mind that, you know, I hear people and everybody's entitled to their opinion, and we don't expect to get 100% agreement on everything. But when I hear people say if your vote mattered, they wouldn't allow you to do it. Well, they, for centuries, well, I shouldn't say centuries, for at least one century, ever since black people so-called got the right to vote after the Civil War, they have been trying to prevent us from getting it. You know, I was talking the other day about African American revolutionaries and how the United States wouldn't even exist as a nation. And yes, I know now it's a corporation, but it wouldn't even exist as a republic if not for free and enslaved black men joining the Revolutionary Army. But even then, even back then and before the formation of this nation, which later turned into a corporation, they didn't want to give black people the right to vote. They couldn't even testify in court or against a white person or anything like that. So that tells me. And then when we see all of these laws, and I'm in the state of North Carolina, which has a case being deliberated right now, being litigated, I should say, concerning this voter ID laws, which we had a Republican who had some little position here in North Carolina. And he was caught on tape saying that their whole point of passing voter ID legislation was to stop the people that vote for Democrats in this state. And we know that's predominantly black people, whether or not that's to their detriment or not, to limiting themselves politically to a party that isn't doing anything for you. But, you know, state politics are somewhat kind of different than, you know, the federal government when you have, you know, the Congress and whatnot. All right. So that's why you hear the term local politics matter. So I'm of the opinion that, you know, obviously the vote must matter or they wouldn't be going through all of this to water down our votes or prevent us from voting. And, you know, they would have gave it to us from the beginning. You know, if it didn't matter, then they wouldn't have cared if black people, free black people here in on this continent was being able to vote. So, you know, that's just how I feel about it. So to me, you know, it absolutely is an important tool that can be used in the current paradigm. Pending revolution, of course, because I think ultimately there's going to have to be a revolution, a dissolving of the corporation, and we need to start over from scratch and create a new republic that is based on justice and not white supremacy as the founding white supremacists intended it to be. So, you know, again, getting back to black people not being astute in the area of politics, and I'm talking about the masses. I'm talking about, and I'm not talking about those that don't vote for whatever reason, but I'm talking about the minority of black people who vote. From my observations, based on the evidence, most of them don't know how the game is played, and it's not really their fault that they don't know how the game is being played, because they're being constantly fed misinformation. They're being miseducated on how politics work in this country. Now, that's not to totally let them off the hook, because, you know, as individuals, we should be studying and knowing the intricacies of the things that we are involved in, and we shouldn't be getting involved in things if we don't know what the hell we doing and we don't know how to play the game. So don't play then. If you don't know how to play, then don't play. All right. But I do want to highlight how I picked up. I seen an article that came across social media yesterday, and this article was from 2012, and it came from the Griot. I think I've heard people say, I haven't really done the research. I do know that the Griot was owned by white supremacists. I think it's owned by, it's either the Washington Times or the Washington Post owns the Griot. And of course, you know, they're going to showcase a black person and hire a whole bunch of black people, because that's who their target audience is. And many of us think, oh, this is a black outlet. No, the hell it ain't. No, it's a white outlet with a bunch of proxies, a bunch of black proxies working for them. All right. And so, but I saw this article, and it was from June 5th, 2012. And this was being shared on Facebook yesterday. And the title of this article said, "What's Obama done for black people?" Nothing. Right. Now, you would take that as, oh, he's criticizing Obama. He's coming out with some anti-blackness and attacking our first black president and all this old garbage. But if you read the subtitle, it goes on to say, and that's the way it should be. Save the criticism for his policies that affect all Americans. And this was written by David Swerdlick, who writes also for The Washington Post, I discovered. And of course, like I stated, the Washington Post owns the Griot. So, you know, he working for white people. All right. And so I'm like, you know, that is just so freaking ignorant, you know, to be telling black people that we shouldn't be criticizing politicians. Right. But if we're going to criticize his policies, let's just criticize the ones that affect all people and not black people disproportionately or black people specifically. No, no, don't do that. That's incorrect. See, that's what's wrong, man. That's why we are so miseducated. We are so misled, because the white supremacists, you know, I would not say, as some have said, that they the smartest on the planet. I would just say that they are the most deceptive on the planet. Okay, they are very deceptive, and they use racial showcasing, as Mr. Fuller calls it, but I call it proxy racism. They use proxies to push this propaganda on the people and miseducate them, you know. And that's just a shame, man. But you know, if we're going to combat the tactics or the tools that are being used against us, we first got to identify them. We got to talk about them. We got to have a dialogue. We got to have a discussion. We got to have an analytical view of these things. And that just don't make any sense, because name another group of people, whether they are people who are classified religiously as Jews, or whether they are classified politically as conservatives, or whether they are classified socially as homosexuals. Are they being told that? When have you ever told these people, and when have you ever witnessed these people saying, well, don't criticize, you know, George Bush because he is, you know, not friendly to homosexuals and whatnot, and won't let homosexuals serve openly in the military. Don't criticize him for that. Criticize him for his policies that affect all Americans. You ain't seen it. I ain't seen it, because it don't exist. All right? No, it don't exist. So that is the premise of today's program, the miseducation of the black voter. If you would like to weigh in with some comments, with some observations, if you have a question, Please give me a call at 641-715-3660. That's 641-715-3660. The participant code, of course, is 549-032-POUND. That's 549-032-POUND. To comment or to signal the host, just hit *6 and 1. I will see on the switchboard that you have a question, and I am dialed into the switchboard right now. They didn't kick me out today like I was kicked out yesterday. You can use the web-based flash phone as well and make a free phone call if you don't have international free long distance or something like that. I know we had a brother call us from the Virgin Islands to give us a report on what white supremacists are doing in the Virgin Islands to the black people that live there. You can use a web-based flash phone as long as you got a pair of headsets and a mic, obviously. I think, though, the vendor that we use, freeconferencecallhd.com, I think they have an app for mobile phones as well. So, you know, take advantage of free stuff. I certainly try to take advantage of all the free stuff I can, you know. When you on a tight budget, man, you know, you got to make things work. And certainly black people are good at making things, taking something out of nothing taking something out of nothing and producing. All right. The conference line, the studio line. Come on, Scotty, get your brain on right. The studio line is 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030. Now, before I jump into the meat of today's program, there are a couple of other stories that I want to relay to you, the listener. And I didn't plan on talking about these. And a lot of times I don't even know what I plan to talk about until the day of the program, and sometimes a couple of hours before the program, as you know, I'm just inundated with so much information from so many sources. It's hard to whittle them down, and you know, a lot of it is equally important, but we have a limited time that we can talk about these things. So I want to talk about sports, how I think sports get a bad rap, you know, in this country. And obviously I'm not talking about everybody in this country, but there's a certain segment among black people who we like to denigrate sports, and we like to portray these young men and women as well. Lately, shout out to Layla Ali, the daughter of the great Muhammad Ali and whatnot. But we like to denigrate these people, and we like to call them slaves and compare professional sports to slavery. When I mean, I ain't never heard of no slave being paid millions of dollars, you know, to play a sport. I ain't never heard of any corporations getting slaves to endorse their products. I don't see it. I don't see the comparison whatsoever. You know, if you want to talk about people getting physicals, and I talked about this in the past, you want to talk about people getting physicals, damn, your job, you know. If you got a good job and you got, you know, insurance and whatnot, you are encouraged, if not required, to have an annual physical. Isn't that recommended to everyone, you know, to see the doctor and whatnot? And if I'm invest millions of dollars into someone, I want to make sure they're not going to drop dead on the basketball court. So I'm going to put them through a physical. I mean, that's just common damn sense. Now, how is that comparable to a captive labor? How's that comparable to enslaved Africans in the past and present? Okay, it's not comparable, because these men can and women can retire anytime. They can quit playing anytime they get ready to play, walk away, take their millions of dollars with them. They ain't got to play, you know, their entire lives and whatnot. You got people I've seen, NFL players who retire after just 4 or 5 years because they're concerned about their health with all this information coming out about CTE, you know, brain damage and all that kind of stuff. So if they were slaves, then they couldn't just walk away. They couldn't say, hey, I'm concerned about my health. I don't think I want to play football no more. I made a lot of money in these past 5 years, and I'm not greedy, and that's enough for me. You know, so I'm out of here. Slaves don't get to do that. Okay, slaves don't get to do that. All right, so let's stop being silly sometimes. You know, let's be serious. Stop being non-serious. Let's be analytical and use true, you know, comparisons. You know, like people in prison being forced to work for slave wages if being paid at all. Anything. That's comparable. Because it's an extension of that same institution that we talk about historically. It, you know, again, slavery ain't never been abolished. So I don't like these comparisons to things that aren't nowhere even close to being similar. All right. Now, that said, y'all know this is Super Bowl weekend. Y'all know the local team here in North Carolina. I don't live in Charlotte. I've lived in Charlotte, but I have family that lives in Charlotte on my dad's side. And I live here outside of Charlotte in a different county, surrounded by a bunch of Confederate crackers and whatnot. All of them ain't Confederates. All of them ain't racist, but it's a damn sure whole lot of them. So I don't live in Charlotte, but I take an interest of what goes on in Charlotte. And so y'all know the Carolina Panthers are in the Super Bowl this weekend. And because they had home field advantage all throughout the playoffs, all those home games were being played. Well, obviously, if they're home games, they're being played in Charlotte, right? But, you know, everybody had to come here. Man, do you know how many tens of millions of dollars was generated in tax revenue for Charlotte in the county of Mecklenburg, where, you know, Charlotte is located at? Do you know the tens of millions of dollars, if not hundreds of millions? I don't know. I haven't taken a look at any data to show just how much money they brought into the city. Coffers through sales tax. And, you know, a lot of people get employed through sports, not just athletes. You got stadium attendance. You got the hotel industry. You got lots of people are being employed, right? Okay. All right. So it generates, it creates jobs, and it generates tax revenue. What is this tax revenue to be used for? Well, the mayor of Charlotte, they got a new mayor. She's a white woman. I forget her name. I think her last name is Roberts. Mayor Roberts has stated that, you know, she wanted to use the city tax funds to fund social programs for the black youth in the city. Of course, she didn't use the word black, but, you know, we all know who she was talking about. She said that she didn't want to use money to hire a whole bunch of police officers like we heard Hillary Clinton talking about in the 90s and flooding the streets with more cops and all of that and spending all this money on toys for cops, you know, tasers and other gadgets and whatnot to help them in their slave catching. No, she didn't say that. She said that she wanted to create after school programs, recreational, you know, create recreational facilities and, you know, jobs programs for the youth, especially when you're looking at black youth with over 51% reported unemployment rate. It's probably closer to 90%, you know, because, once you fall off them unemployment rolls, you may still be looking for work, but you're not counted as being unemployed, okay, even though you ain't found a job, all right? So they manipulate those statistics and whatnot. And so lots of money is being generated by sports in this town. And one thing I will say as an observer of the Carolina Panthers organization since it started in 1995, is when they landed the franchise, is that these players, and I would say this current team even more so than past teams, these players create their own nonprofit foundations and they serve the people of Charlotte. Cam Newton Foundation. Man, I can't heap enough good reports or praise upon that young man for what he's doing for the children and the young people of Charlotte, and not just the children, even though that's his primary focus, you know, but for their parents as well. all the people, and he's not the only one. Thomas Davis, you know, one of the linebackers, he got the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. And they give that award for people to recognize what they're doing in the community and whatnot. So I was reading an article this morning about the homeless, you know, in San Francisco and how they were being rounded up and you know, around the Super Bowl and whatnot and rounded up because they didn't want homeless people to be an eyesore or anything like that. They did not do that in Charlotte. When all of these different playoff games were going on in Charlotte, the NFC Championship, which was here, they were not rounding up homeless people and trying to, you know, herd them into some kind of corral so that all these people coming in don't see Charlotte's homeless and whatnot. That was not going on in Charlotte. I can tell you that. All right. Now, but what has been going on, and this isn't just through the playoffs, but all year round, is people like Thomas Davis, people like Jonathan Stewart, who's a running back for the Panthers. You know, they have really been involved with the homeless people in Charlotte. You know, whether it is feeding them, whether it is funding programs for them, whether it is paying bills and helping them, you know, not be homeless and get into a house or an apartment or something like that. That is a lot of help that people are getting that need the most help that otherwise would not be getting that help if not for these athletes. Okay? Cam Newton is making corporations donate to his foundation so that he can serve the youth of Charlotte and buy them school supplies, buy them backpacks, buy them computers, you know. Around Christmas, he was going around to the schools giving out Christmas gifts and whatnot. Thomas Davis and them were taking, you know, homeless families around to buy Christmas for their kids so that they could have, you know, something to play with and whatnot. And, you know, it may not seem like much, but it goes a lot, man. A little bit of kindness goes a long way. And so it is my conclusion that a lot of people would not be getting help if not for professional athletes. And if we even go back and look at sports history in the United States, we can see the prominent role that athletes have played in Black liberation. And even though we haven't achieved Black liberation and whatnot, and we're still under this racist system and being dominated by it in so many areas, these people still stood up and they still lended their voices. And more importantly, they lended their money to fund anti-racist organizations and activities. And we can even extend that to celebrities like Harry Belafonte, who was not only using some of his money to buy guns for the Deacons of Defense, but delivering those guns to them, to the people that needed those guns so that they could operate their self-defense units all across the South. And so, you know, I certainly appreciate their contributions in the past, and I certainly appreciate their contributions, like, you know, all these crackers and racists that's in the media. All you've been hearing all week, oh, he dances too much. He talking about Cam Newton. He dances too much, and you know, quarterbacks shouldn't dance. And I mean, just nonsense, just straight up garbage, nonsense and lies. And his celebrations are too long. Well, this man ain't been flagged not one time for an excessive celebration, you know, and so all of that garbage, right? And so we even had, like, I listen to local sports radio sometimes, and I was listening the other day, and like I said, the Charlotte Observer, the main paper in Charlotte, they're a bunch of racists, all right? They got some proxies working for them, but for the most part, these people are racist, man. Charlotte Observer been around for at least the 1950s and whatnot, and they, you know, I've looked at some of their archives as I was doing research on my family. And looking at some of those old art, these people are straight up racist. So you had, you know, these are the same people that published a letter from an anonymous racist, po-white trash from Tennessee criticizing Cam Newton, talking about pretending like it was from her 9-year-old child and saying, oh, doesn't he have children? Doesn't he know that he's setting a bad example for children by dancing and celebrating and doing the Superman pose and dabbing and all of that? Man, that child ain't wrote no letter to no Charlotte Observer from Tennessee. And why the heck would Charlotte Observer even publish such an article? Why? And then it happened a second time here recently in the with a different publication, you know. But then this dude who writes for the Charlotte Observer, I want to say is Joe Person, but I may be incorrect. It may be another one of their sports writers. But he gonna call in to the program the other day, and he gonna say that, you know, he's out there at the Super Bowl, and Cam said what he said about being an African American quarterback, and people ain't never seen nothing like me. And so, you know, and the question was to Cam is, why do you think these idiots are criticizing you just for having fun playing the game and whatnot? And he said, you know what he said, I'm an African American quarterback, ain't nothing like they ever seen before and whatnot. And then so this white man, this suspected racist, gonna call in to the show and gonna say, you know, I wish Cam hadn't have made it all about himself. See, I pick up on that codified racism that they be practicing, you know, especially in media. That's why we had to be careful when we be sharing articles and whatnot. And I'm gonna talk about that further on the next thing I'm gonna be discussing. But you know, you had to be careful, man, when you just sharing white people's news with black folks. And you ain't, you know, you ain't even screening this stuff for racism. You ain't even screening it for deception. Or you don't even point out how they are deceiving people. It's like we're doing their damn jobs for them. We're helping them spread these lies and proper racist propaganda. You know, we got to take note of that, and we need to correct that behavior. That's my opinion. But yeah, so he called in, and I was like, man, everybody on the program kind of knew he was being negative. We knew where he was coming from. He was being racist, even though it wasn't brought up. So I had to call in, because I always do when something racist is said. But I was codified in my response, because I know how they will cut you off, bleep stuff out, and you know, they, so you have to be slick like them. So instead of me calling in and saying, why is Joe Person being a racist and calling in here with this negativity, and we trying to have, you know, we're trying to celebrate the success of the Carolina Panthers, why he want to call in and denigrate, you know, the hometown quarterback like that? No, I didn't call in, I didn't say that. What I called in and said, because they asked the question, if you could participate in Media Day and ask any of these Panther players any question that you wanted to ask them, who would you ask and what would you ask? So I called in after he said what he said. Maybe they picked me up 2 callers later, and I said, you know, I want to take it back to the question y'all asked earlier about asking questions. And I said, if I was able to ask any Carolina Panther a question, this is the question that I would ask. It would go to Cam Newton, and I would ask Cam Newton, why did you think it was important for you to visit with the families of that vicious terrorist attack that happened in Charleston, South Carolina? And then how did it make you feel when the team owner, Mr. Richardson, donated $100,000 to the families so that they could bury the victims and create a memorial for them? And then I said, I'll take your comments off air. I just left it at that. Man, if you could hear a pin drop over the radio, you would have heard a pin drop. If somebody dropped a penny on the floor in the studio, even if it was carpet, you would have heard the thud. That's how quiet they got. But then the other guy, and I engaged with this guy, he's non-white, even though I think he's functioning is white, Frank Garcia, but I engage him through Black Talk Radio Network on Twitter, and I ask him questions, and I push articles to him, you know, that's not just dealing with sports, but dealing with the intersection of sports and racism. And I've been working on this guy for quite some time, right? And so after I hung up and you had this pause as people didn't know what to say, and then he just started going off, man. He started going off and he was like, see, that's what I'm talking about. People want to criticize Cam Newton, but don't want to give him no credit for the stuff that he do for the community. You know, because that was not really national news. A lot of people don't know. After that terrorist attack, Cam Newton went down there. He didn't take a bunch of reporters with him because he wasn't going down there for publicity for himself, so that people could say, look at Cam, isn't he such a wonderful person? Even though he seems to be a wonderful young man. I would love to have a son like Cam Newton. But he went down there quietly by himself, and he met with the only reason we knew about it was because one of the victims' families took pictures of him with them, and they posted it to social media. So that's the only way we even found out about it. So my whole point is to say is don't try to make these false comparisons of sports athletes to slaves. Don't try to compare professional sports to slavery, because it is nowhere near the same thing. And there are a whole lot of black people, poor black people especially, non-white people and even poor white people, people who need help the most, who would not be helped if not for these sports franchises and the money that they're generating, and these athletes who then take some of their own personal wealth and then also twist the arm of these corporations to also donate and to help these people. So, and then another thing, because history is important, man. If history wasn't important, they wouldn't hide it from you. Just like people say, you know, I talked about it at the beginning of the program, which I do think voting is important, because they wouldn't have kept it from us for so long, and they wouldn't be trying to suppress it now if it wasn't important. But if history wasn't important, they wouldn't be trying to hide from us. And see, we want to give white people credit for things that they don't deserve credit for, just like the invention of sports. And so I came across this article about the invention of modern professional sports, time to give Native Americans credit. And I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to share this article on our Facebook page, Black Talk Radio Network. You can read it for yourself. I'm not going to read it to you. Okay, but I had already knew that basketball was not invented by Dr. Naismith in Indiana or wherever the hell he was in a YMCA. I had already knew that basketball was copied from Native Americans who, and I don't even think they were here on the North American continent. I think they were in South America. It might have been the Incas. I'm not sure, as my memory is failing me right now on that. But I do know that they had this cylinder high up in the sky, about, I think it was something like 20 feet in the air, and you took this ball, and to score you had to navigate your way around the players just trying to stop you to score, and then you got to throw the ball through the hoop. That's what it was. It was a hoop, a cylinder, a circle, a hoop. Dr. Naismith didn't invent basketball. What he did was steal elements from a non-white culture, a game that they played to train warriors, right? Because if you're a warrior, you know, it's good to be athletic. You know, you want to develop your agility. You want to develop your physical capabilities, your physical skills, so that you can defeat your opponent in a life or death match. And that is, from my study and from the reason why these sports were developed. Why? And it was mainly warriors who participated in it, because it was like training session. When I was in the United States military, you know, that was part of it. You know, being in physical shape, and we played games and things of that nature to keep ourselves in shape. But most of the story, I will share this with you from the article. It says, though much more exciting than our modern watered down version of quote unquote ball play, ball games among the early, Creeks sound remarkably similar to typical sports events in modern America and Europe, with steady media hype, merchandise, gambling, painted faces, wild fans, tumultuous fighting for the ball, serious injuries, the use of questionable medicine, and so forth. In thus description from the Creeks, so they're talking about the Creek Indians, one can see the roots of modern hockey, soccer, NFL-style football, lacrosse, polo, basketball, and even Little League baseball, depending upon which town you're in. Pretty much all that modern European society has contributed is the use of Gatorade and TV cameras. Surely some kind of reparations are due for the theft of yet another Native American invention. So, these people did not invent this. And so saying that any, you know, trying to tell people that, you know, white people came up with this and it's wrong to participate in it for whatever reason, reading is essential, and not reading his lies, but reading the real story. Okay? That's very important. So, I didn't mean to talk about it that long, but, you know, I'm just very grateful for all you athletes out there that are making lots of money. And you don't forget where you come from. And you even go back to these neighborhoods where you grew up at, and you try to make things better for the people that are there now. I appreciate them, and I think, you know, they don't get the credit that they deserve. They're helping a whole lot of people that need to be helped, that would not get help otherwise. And that's just a fact of the matter. Let me go ahead and take a station identification break. I want to talk about the Obama administration and John Kerry, the current Secretary of State, specifically running interference for Hillary Clinton, and trying to throw Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell under the bus, and trying to say that they got classified information sent to their private emails and whatnot. Why would you even be bringing that up now? Now, these people have been out of the office of Secretary of State for how long now? Darn near a decade, all right? Condoleezza's case, Colin Powell's case, it's been over a decade since he's been in office. So you want me, why would you even waste time and going all the way back through Colin Powell's emails and Secretary of State, former Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, and no, I don't like her, but, you know, the truth is the truth, you know, and trying to say or insinuate that they were doing the same thing that Hillary Clinton was doing, because that's just a bald-faced lie. And then I also want to use this as a teachable moment about us sharing white lies on social media without altering it, without changing it, or without pointing out the things that need to be pointed out, instead of allowing these people to misinform us with these deceptive headlines, and some of them are just outright lies. And so I want to talk about that on the other side of this break. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Our people very serious about not being very serious.
This is Ron Hayes with Hood News, and you're listening to the Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Again, the telephone lines, because I really cannot stay on air till 6 o'clock today. Tando Radio Show will be on at 6, but I need to get off a little earlier than that because there are some things that's come up that I need to take care of. So if you have a question, if you have a comment, if you have a point of contention, because 100% agreement isn't necessary, only that we treat each other with the proper respect due each other, okay, you can call us at 641-715-3660, participant code 549-032-pound, hit *6 and 1 to comment on air. Use the web-based flash phone if you choose, or you can call us on the studio line, 704-951-5030. So I want to take a look at this article now. Let me see if I can find the tag, because somebody tagged me in this article. This is a person that shares a lot of useful information with me, and I hope that he did not take my comments as me criticizing him or making it personal towards him, but I was just pointing out an obvious fact. Let me see if I can find here's his page, because I want to share the post. I want to read the headline to you as he shared it with me, the original headline from, I believe it was, let me see, I think it was the Washington Post. I'm not sure about that. Let me see. Let me scroll down. He had tagged me in it. Man, I got to get off of this page. It's starting to lock up my screen. Let me see. Man, he be sharing a whole lot of information. When did he tag me in this? Let me go ahead and look at the tags, and maybe I could find it that way. But the story is about what I was just sharing with you. All right, here it go. Here, I found it. Give me just a moment. All right, so this person shared this with me, tagged me in it. And this is the headline, The Hill, TheHill.com. That's right, The Hill. All right, that's the name of the publication that put it out. I think they're based in Washington, D.C., and they write, that's all they write about is politics and whatnot. So if you never heard of The Hill, it's TheHill.com. And this is the, let me read to you this headline. Report, semicolon, Powell Rice staff received classified emails on private accounts. They were unclassified at the time, it says in the subtext. Powell says. Now, that, if you just read that headline, because these people practice deception, man. It has taken me a number of years to make myself able to be able to spot this type of stuff. Because before, I was like everybody else. I wasn't paying it no attention. But let me tell you this. These sort of headlines, these deceptive headlines and headlines that outright lie, all right, they are made for social media. That's who they're writing for, social media. Because they know, like I have observed, most people don't click and read the article. They don't click through and actually read the article to see what the rest of the article says, any evidence they're presenting, any additional information they're presenting. They just read the freaking headline. So a person on Facebook would be like, report, Powell Rice staff received classified emails on private accounts. So Hillary Clinton's telling the truth. She ain't doing nothing no different than any of these other people's doing. Move along. Ain't nothing to see. They just trying to victimize Hillary Clinton. Look, you got Colin Powell when he was Secretary of State. What's her name? Condoleezza Rice when she was Secretary of State. They received classified emails on private accounts. So this is just proof that they just trying to just bring Hillary Clinton down, and that FBI investigation and all of that is just a sham and all this and that. All right. That's what they would be thinking if they didn't click through and read the rest of the article. Now, I know how the business works. And it's possible that the person who wrote the article didn't choose the headlines. That's why they have editors. All right. That's the job of the editor, you know, to come up with the headlines. So some of them are allowed to use their own headlines or whatnot. But generally, the editors are the ones who get the articles. Then they may even edit the articles and take information out of the articles or shorten it up or send it back and say you need to make this more concise or whatnot, and you're using too many big words, and the common people don't use those type of words, and we want everybody to understand what's being said and conveyed here. So let's not use words that are not in common usage and whatnot. So, you know, want to show everybody what a big brain and how big my vocabulary is, and let me use these words that most people don't even know the definition of. But anyway. Now, if you click through to the article, you will find that it ain't the same. That it ain't the same. And so I had shared a video I had made last year that I had shared with people who have social media pages, Facebook pages, like a Black Talk Radio Network page, New Abolitionist Radio page, Political Prisoner Radio page. You know, you're operating a news media page on Facebook and you're sharing information. And I was like, you know, you have to read these articles. You have to screen these articles and not just share them because of a headline. Because that headline could be deceptive and, you know, it might be a bunch of stuff that you may not be wanting to share. You know, you shouldn't be sharing this with our people because, you know, a lot of our people are not educated on how these people practice deception, and they just gonna read a headline or whatever. So I show people in this video how you can click on the article, get the URL. The URL means Uniform Resource Locator. That is the web address of an article or a website. How do you find it? You know, just like you trying to find a house, it's got to have an address, a street address. Well, that's same with the internet. So you take the URL, the web address, you post it on your page. Now, you will note that you can click down there before you post it. You just post it to your page, then it populates. But you don't push publish. What you do is you then click on the title and it allows you to change it. And some of these people, corporations have been complaining about that. You know, I noticed that conversation was going on last year. They were complaining and trying to get Facebook to change this, you know, because how dare you, you know, allow people to change what we have, the titles that we have picked and whatnot. Well, Facebook has yet to change it. And then on Twitter, well, Twitter doesn't work the same way as Facebook. So what I'll do, if I share it from Twitter and that headline needs to change to be more truthful, to reflect accurate information, then I'll just change the headline on Twitter and just have the link there, and they can go back and they can go read it. Because most of them, they see the headline on Facebook or on social media, and that's what's embedded in their brains. And so even once they click through in the article, they're not going to pay attention to the real headline, because you already fed them. You've already programmed the headline you want them to have. So this is what I did. I changed it. I saved it on Facebook, on our Facebook page, and I told the guy, look, this is the video, why you should change it, and why we had to be careful about what we're sharing. So I read through the article, And here is a very important point that was noted in the article itself. Powell added that there was a difference between his email situation and that of former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who used a personal email server that was found to have received classified information. It's a lot different from what the rest of us were doing and what Mrs. Clinton is doing, Powell said. See, you wouldn't know that if you didn't click through. You wouldn't know that Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell did not have a personal private server set up by a corporation or a company or something that they hired to come in and set this up in their house. Okay? You wouldn't know that. Just reading that headline, you would think that they did the same thing Hillary Clinton did. No, they did not. No, what happened was is that a few emails, we're not even talking about a whole lot of emails here, a few emails that were not classified at the time, and we can debate whether or not they should have been classified, because you're supposed to know that before you're sending it. You know, when you're at that high of a level of government, you're supposed to mark those communications. You're supposed to tell everybody under you. All right, you have people with special roles, special jobs. That's all they focus on. How do I know? I had a top secret security clearance and access to a lot of sensitive information when I was in the military, and especially when I was over there in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, during the Gulf War. So I know how the game is played. I know how things are supposed to be done. And so all they did was some of the staff people forwarded emails to their personal emails. That's a lot different than them setting up a server, a private server in their houses, and then tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, who knows how many emails, once the total final count is reached, emails. Hillary Clinton was doing that to hide those records, to keep them from being included in the government records. She was hiding this stuff. So that's a big difference. So I changed the headline. And now if you go to Black Talk Radio Network's Facebook page, you will see the headline says, Powell and Rice did not use a private email server like Clinton, so it is not comparable. Because I know that most people, not all, I know most people on Facebook don't do nothing but read headlines. That's all they do. They read one sentence and they think they got all the information. They think they know all there is to know, and they think they got the real story when they don't. Now, the article itself had the real story and pointing out how it's not the same. But whoever the person was, possibly the editor and not the writer, who chose the headline, they were practicing deception. Probably a Hillary Clinton supporter. I don't know who the Hill's editorial board has endorsed. But I also caught the New York Times doing the same thing. And the New York Times editorial board has endorsed Hillary Clinton. But it wasn't related to their email. It was another story. Like, I was watching CNN and Wolf Blitzer, whatever the dude's name is. I told somebody it was Wolf of Wits. It wasn't Wolf of Wits. It was Wolf Blitzer. I could see how I made that mistake. But Wolf Blitzer was interviewing Bernie Sanders' campaign manager, this white guy. I can't remember his name. And they were talking about, debates and saying, what's going on? I hear the people of New York want y'all to debate, saying the Democrats don't have enough debates and they want y'all to come there and debate. And so the campaign manager said, we're down to one sticking point that Hillary Clinton won't agree to. So, once she agrees to it, we have been calling for more debates and whatnot. And so then Wolf Blitzer said to him, well, I'll be interviewing Hillary Clinton here in just a bit, and I will ask her that question of why, you know, she seems not to be willing to have this debate in New York City, and I'll get back to you. I'll let you know what she said if you're not watching like that, right? So then, hours later, the New York Times publishes an article with the headline that says Sanders says yes to debate with Hillary. Now, if you did not see that Wolf Blitzer interview with Bernie Sanders' campaign manager, right, and him saying that we want to debate, but the Clintons had this one sticking point, they don't want to do it, so you need to ask her. And Wolf Blitzer saying, I'm going to ask her. Now, if you didn't see that, you would think it was Bernie Sanders who didn't want to debate, going by the New York Times headlines. And I had already knew the New York Times editorial board had endorsed Hillary Clinton. See, this is why one of the reasons Black Talk Media Project exists. We were, you know, started with the sole mission of elevating black voices that are unfiltered, where we can say whatever the hell we want to say, talk about whatever we want to talk about, and not worry about somebody pulling funding from us or losing advertisers and whatnot. And if we keep it real, as they say, and tell our people the truth and have meaningful dialogue and discussions and whatnot. But also because I knew from Malcolm X telling us through the miracle of videos, you know, recorded video and whatnot, telling me that the American news media is deceptive. It just really galvanized me to make the Black Talk Media Project and Black Talk Radio Network a reality. I mean, it just really put a fire under my behind to get it done. Because like he said, the media can make the innocent look guilty and the guilty look innocent. So there you had the New York Times trying to make Bernie Sanders look like he didn't want to debate, and, you know, finally Hillary got him to say yes. When Hillary is the guilty party who didn't want to debate because she don't want to be asked tough questions, which we'll get to later in the program. They will have you believing that these two black people, regardless of their political affiliations or what you think about them and the crimes they have committed, but the Hill is making you think that Hillary's innocent. That these, hey, look at these niggers. They did it. Why are they going after the white woman? See, you got to read in between the lines here. And that's it, you know, that's what Wes Thayer said, who was a guest on Black Talk Radio News last week, as we were talking about the Obama administration and Clinton murdering all them black people in Libya. This is what Wes Thayer said, because he was part of the thread where I was talking about why and how you change these titles, because they're misleading, they're deceptive, they're pushing lies. They're making the innocent look guilty and the guilty look innocent. And this is what Wes Thayer said. He commented on the new article. I mean, the new post with the new headline of my own making. He said, this is the Clintons' way of saying, if niggers can do it, why can't Hillary? This is, in fact, about Hillary running virtually all of her State Department communications through her own private computer server. Powell and Rice never did that. The importance of not only reading, but comprehending what you read. But in terms of social media, this is very important, because most people, from the studies that I have read from the industry, news industry, most people are getting their news from social media. And they know, these people know that. They know that. That's why they went to Facebook complaining about people changing headlines. How dare you allow these people to change our propaganda so that we can't mislead these people like we want to mislead them? How dare you? You need to eliminate that feature. Well, to Facebook credit, and I don't give them a whole lot of credit for anything, but, you know, they have not given in to these corporate media demands. And they still allow us to change the headlines. And I just told you why it is important, because most people do not click on the article and read the article. They read the headline, and I don't know if we can call that intellectual laziness, whatever label you want to put on it, but it's incorrect behavior. And if you are one of those people that's doing that, please know that I'm coming from a place of love. And because we need to change our behavior, we need to be doing better than what we've been doing. And so you need to stop just reading headlines. You need to click through and read the entire article. And if you are on a social media page, you don't need to just be sharing any and every damn thing. If you have not screened this stuff for deception. Now, it's okay if you sharing it and you pointing out to people, look at that headline, that's deceptive. Here is what it actually says in the article right here. So, you know, where you pointing out people, there, the deception of these people. All right. So, I mean, that's just being a responsible, what would we call that? We'll call that a social media producer or whatever. It's just being responsible. We ain't got to put a name on it, but it's just being responsible, a responsible disseminator of information. You don't want your people that's following you and looking to you for news and information to be misled by white supremacists. So, I'm going to take a station identification break, kick some message music, and then when I come back, I will jump into this stuff about the miseducation of the black voter. Again, I'm not coming from a place of hate or anything like that. No, I'm just offering my observations and offering recommendations. Just pointing out something that an area we need to change in, but also pointing out how they are purposely misleading us as a people, as black people. The Griot is not a black outlet. They just have black people working and writing for them. It's not a black-owned outlet. They don't have the final say, okay? And oftentimes, you know, these people are more than happy, because they're well-paid, they're more than happy to spread confusion among people who look like them, because that's what they paid to do. You don't get big grants and big checks and stuff like that if you ain't in the pocket of these white people. These white supremacists, I should say, the racists. You ain't going to tell these, just like what we're going to talk about, how politics is paid. They do not pay you big money or even give you big money, as I heard some of us have gotten over $500,000. They just ain't giving you that for nothing. They expect something, or you've done something that benefits them. So we'll talk about that. On the other side, you're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, and I am indeed broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. We'll be right back.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
No, it really isn't. Because, see, people are thinking in terms of, well, they want to brag about being black, which means that they are implying that there's something incorrect about being white, even though these are the creations of the Creator. See, and then so everybody gets into this black pride thing or white pride thing, and people immediately start taking sides. It's not about taking sides based on black and white. It's about taking sides based on justice and non-justice. Well, that's what you're really aiming for. Being black doesn't mean anything if you don't believe in justice. And being white doesn't mean anything if you don't believe in justice, except you mean in, you believe in non-justice. And that doesn't make any difference what shade you are or how tall you are or who your cousin was or anything like that, or what so-called nationality you have. Like a lot of people say that they take pride in being an Englishman, or take pride in being a Frenchman, or take pride in being Afrocentric. Well, you're not supposed to be proud of any of those things if you don't believe in justice, because these words mean nothing. No nationality means anything. And waving a flag, if you don't believe in not mistreating people, you've got to believe in not mistreating people, and you got to believe in helping people that need help the most. Otherwise, you don't even have any business breathing.
We have to begin to move to control our community. Everything that's in your community that you don't control is a weapon against you. Public education as it exists today is a weapon against black people. TV and news media, especially the WPP, White Power Press, White People's Paper, and White People's Power, are enemies against black people. What the white press does is that it makes black people an enemy of black people.
I thought that it was a matter of real concern that planted stories intended to serve a national purpose abroad came home and were circulated here and believed here, because this would mean that the CIA could manipulate the news in the United States by channeling it through some foreign country. Now, we're looking at that very carefully.
Do you have any people being paid by the CIA who are contributing to a major circulation American journal?
We do have people who submit pieces to other two American journals.
Do you have any people paid by the CIA who are working for television networks?
This, I think, gets into the kind of getting into the details, Mr. Chairman, that I'd like to get into in executive session.
At CBS, we had been contacted by the CIA. As a matter of fact, by the time I became the head of the whole News and Public Affairs operation in 1954, ships had been established, and I was told about them and asked if I'd carry on with them.
We have quite a lot of detailed information, and we will evaluate it, and we will include any evidence of wrongdoing or any evidence of impropriety in our final report and make recommendations.
Do you have any people being paid by the CIA who are contributing to the National News Services, AP and UPI?
Well, again, I think we're getting into the kind of detail, Mr. Chairman, that I'd prefer to handle in executive session.
Senator, do you think that you named the news organization?
That remains to be decided.
I think it was entirely in order for our correspondents at that time to make use of the CIA agent chiefs of station and other members of the executive staff of CIA as sources of information which were useful in their assessments of world conditions.
Today?
Well, I would think probably for a reporter it would continue today, but because of all of the revelations of the period of the 1970s, it seems to me that a reporter's got to be much more circumspect in doing it now, or he runs the risk of at least being looked at with considerable disfavor by the public. I think you've got to be much more careful about it.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio. Look, we got their own words. Listen. Do you think these people stopped? He even told that man, that was from the after the Frank Church committee hearings on COINTELPRO, How they were demonizing and lying on the Black Panthers in the headlines all across, in all the papers, on all the TV stations, all the radio stations. I even talked to a black journalist who later became a Panther, who used to work in that industry back in the 60s, working on in black radio, and how even black radio was just getting this stuff from the FBI and just putting it out there. No fact checking, no nothing. You think these people have stopped this practice? Man, if you think they stopped this practice, I don't know what to tell you. I don't. I just did a whole segment showing you how these people practice deception. Now, before I jump in, and this is still related to what we're going to talk about next, or what I'm going to talk about next, is going back to that story about the Hill. And publishing that misleading headline, that lie, to make you think Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice was doing nothing no different than what Hillary Clinton was doing. And to Westaya's comment about, you know, who the Clintons' way of saying, if niggers can do it, why can't Hillary? Well, we know Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton ain't on the editorial board of the Hill or whatnot. At least I don't think. I don't know. But, it, you know. But this all starts at the State Department. The State Department, the current State Department with Secretary of State John Kerry, all right, he's the one who put this out there. And there's a reason why he put it out there. And even though I know a lot of y'all want to look at President Obama as if he is practicing justice and whatnot, but he ain't. And so why, you know, it's part of the Obama administration. He the CEO. John Kerry is Secretary of State. I'm sure he consulted with either his cabinet member, somebody, you know, that we gonna put this out there and can try to confuse people and bring the heat and take some of this heat off of Hillary. Because if we don't take the heat off of Hillary, Hillary has shown that she don't mind snitching to save her own neck. See, Hillary Clinton was part of that criminal administration, and she knows the criminality that was going on. It's in her freaking email server. We shared some of those emails with you, showing the real reason that they went into Libya and murdered all them black people, so that the French and the American dollar wouldn't be replaced by a gold-backed currency put out by the African Union. Okay? So they, Hillary Clinton knows a lot of the dirt and the criminality going on behind the scenes. So, of course, they trying to save Hillary Clinton. They trying to minimize the damage. They running interference for her. I don't know. Maybe Obama wants to see her become the next president. Maybe John Kerry wants her to be the next president, next CEO of USA. Who knows? But I do know that it is logical to think that they're practicing this deception because Hillary Clinton will rat you out. She will, man. She'll rat you out to save her own neck. So that's why they doing what they doing. Now, let's get to the meat. Because, you know, we need to know as a people how politics, that people activity area is run. How, what it takes to play this game called politics in this country, even though it's not a game, it's very serious, you know. But I'm just sticking with sports analogies for some reason. It's easier for people to understand. But they had this debate last night, right? So it comes up about Hillary Clinton being paid, I mean, huge sums of money just to give a doggone 60-minute or less speech to these bankers on Wall Street, to Goldman Sachs and whatnot. And so this came out in this debate last night. And Hillary Clinton tried to make it like somebody's attacking her personally and denying that that's how the game is played. And the audience caught on to that and they booed her and whatnot. So I'm going to let y'all listen to that clip.
So I think it's time to end the very artful smear that you and your campaign have been carrying out in recent weeks. And let's talk about the issues. Let's talk about the issues that divide us.
Let's stop it right there. They were booing her because those people know that ain't nobody smearing you. How is it a smear if you've even admitted in the past that you're admitting that you took these doggone huge sums of money to give speeches to Wall Street. You know, and so for her to sit up there and then try to make it look like somebody lying on her, see that she's the liar. Let's continue to listen.
And let's talk about issues. We both agree with campaign finance reform.
Let's talk about issues.
I worked hard for McCain-Feingold. I want to reverse Citizens United.
Let's talk about issues. All right, let's talk about why in the 1990s Wall Street got deregulated. Did it have anything to do with the fact that Wall Street provided, spent billions of dollars on lobbying and campaign contributions? Well, some people might think, yeah, that had some influence.
All right. Oh, okay. Now, he being codified because he has to be careful in not making it personal against Hillary Clinton. But if you caught on to the key word that he used, the 90s, when the Wall Street was deregulated and allowed to do the criminal things that it's been doing. Who was in power in the 90s? Then you can't say, you can't blame it on the Republicans while you had a Republican Congress led by Newt Gingrich, and y'all might remember the Contract with America and kicking all these poor people off of food assistance and out of public housing if they've been caught up in the drug war that you used to target black people. And whatnot. That was the Clintons, man. The Clintons signed, and Bill Clinton signed these things into law. Hillary Clinton was out there pushing these policies and saying why we need this or why we need that. Now, if McCain-Feingold was sufficient, then we wouldn't be still having that problem now, would we? Would we? And she could say she against this and against that, and hell, you know. She's a flip-flopper, as they said about John Kerry. She only takes certain positions when they become popular among the masses. Otherwise, you know, man, she's behind it and for it. So it was in the 90s where these Wall Street executives donated billions of dollars and lobby, well, we can't say donated, but gave billions of dollars to their lobbyists to go put into the pockets and have dinners and buy gifts for people in Congress to get them to deregulate Wall Street. That's how the game is played. Everybody who is serious about politics, who knows a little something about how things become law in this country, they know that's how the game is played. And that's why she got booed. She tried to deny it.
Let's ask why it is that we pay by far the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs, and your medicine can be doubled tomorrow, and there's nothing that the government can do to stop it. You think it has anything to do with the huge amounts of campaign contributions and lobbying from the fossil fuel industry? Let's talk about climate change. Do you think there is a reason why not one Republican has the guts to recognize that climate change is real and that we need to transform our energy system? Do you think it has anything to do with the Koch brothers and ExxonMobil pouring huge amounts of money into the political system? That is what goes on in America. There is a reason why these people are putting huge amounts of money into our political system. And in my view, it is undermining American democracy, and it is allowing Congress to represent wealthy campaign contributors and not the working families of this country.
Well, Senator, I mean,
that's just common sense, man. It don't take a genius to figure out that people do not give huge sums of money to politicians. They don't give them to political action committees so they can run ads and whatnot to convince the public to vote for this or to get behind that or to vote for this person. Or, you know, they don't spend it if they not getting results from that money. They don't. I mean, who would you? Would you let's say, you know, you go to something wrong with your car. Are you going to pay a mechanic not to work on your car? You know what I'm saying? Come on. If you pay a mechanic, you expect him to fix the car. Well, these corporations pay politicians because they expect them to fix laws in their favor. I mean, it's just elementary. It's common freaking sense, man. And anybody that tries to deny this is going on is lying to you, or they're ignorant. They're ignorant. They don't know what the hell they're talking about, and they need to stop talking about things they don't know about what they're talking about. Okay? Now, let's talk about that big money Wall Street financing Obama's campaign. I know a lot of you black people gave $5, gave $20 and whatnot to support Barack Obama's campaign in 2007, 2008, and then again before, you know, that man set records because so many black people just wanted to see a black face in the White House, gave all this money, right? But he got even more money from Wall Street. And before he even became viable as a presidential candidate, he was getting money from Wall Street. All right. Black Agenda Report does excellent reporting from the black left. And they have written some articles that I come across in the past few days. Well, it might have been last week, detailing how Wall Street has backed President Obama even when he was an Illinois senator. Well, what did they get in return? Well, when he became president, he signed on to bail out the banks with your money, with my money, with taxpayer money. They certainly got a return on their investment in his campaign. You don't give huge sums of money without expecting something in return. It just does. That's not how things work. It's not how it works in this society and in with the form of government that we have. It doesn't work like that. In addition to getting money from the criminal bankers, and there's another clip. This was brought out last night as well. Bernie Sanders mentioned how you get caught with some drugs, you get arrested, you get convicted. Now you got felony status. And while he didn't go all into it, but you get that felony status, guess what? Well, you don't get access to public housing. You don't get access to food assistance. You don't get access to certain federal programs like the Pell Grant for education because you were felon. You don't get, guess when those things were passed? Dude, I don't have to tell y'all, do I? We've been talking about her and her husband, you know, for at least 45 minutes now. In the 90s is when that happened. Okay? Now, who else was giving money to the Clintons and who else was giving money to the Clintons and raising money for Hillary Clinton's campaign until she got called out on it? And I like to think I had something to do with that. You know, when I told DeRay McKesson, the Black Lives Matter dude, and they were talking about they were going to meet with Hillary Clinton. And I got at him on Twitter. And I was like, make sure you ask her in this private, closed-door meeting about the private prison industry, you know, working for her campaign. It was only after he raised that question with her that she then fired the two people that from the private prison, formerly private prison lobbyists, on vacation, now working to raise money for her campaign. It was only then that she fired them. But while they were passing that mass incarceration continuation of slavery against black people during the 90s, well, guess who was funding all of that? Guess who was funding the Clintons? Guess who was also giving to the Republicans to get that mass incarceration legislation, three strikes, you're out. You're a slave for life and you know, kick you off of food assistance, education assistance, kick you out of public housing, not allow you to even, you know, stay in public housing with your family and whatnot, so that you will then, you know, be forced to go out there and commit crimes of survival and end right back up in prison. Man, these people, private prison lobbyists, gave all that money to the Clintons, and that's what they got in return. And, you know, we can also throw Wall Street in there in terms of supporting human trafficking and modern day slavery. Bank of America, they got a bailout. They invested in private prisons. Wells Fargo got a bailout. They invested in private prisons. All right. These companies, these private prison enslaver companies are where? Traded on Wall Street. Wall Street started out as a slave trading block where they would bring enslaved Africans to sell them. I'm telling you, slavery is and always has been a cornerstone of this capitalist system predicated on racism. So that's how the game is played. GMO. Now, a lot of people in my circle been talking about, you know, genetically modified organisms, genetically modified food, fighting to get these grocery stores and food distributors and manufacturers and whatnot, processors, to label this food and let you know if it was grown in a lab. If y'all injected some genes, or, you know, like I heard, you know, they have done with tomatoes and stuff, you know, inject fruit fly genes into it to make the tomatoes be red, or I can't recall. But y'all, you know, the people who know about the GMOs, y'all know what I'm talking about. Well, guess who is a big leader in that? Monsanto, right? Y'all heard of Monsanto, right? Remember down there in Mexico when all them Mexican farmers were burning the crops, the genetically modified crops for wheat. I believe it was for wheat, whatever they're making tortilla chips out of and whatnot. You know, which is a staple food down there. And they were burning the crops of Monsanto. Well, guess who gives a lot of money? It's to Hillary Clinton. Monsanto. Not only Monsanto, but the grocers industry. They got their little, you know, bunch of grocery chains and whatnot, form a little club, and they all give money to that, put money in a pot so they can then distribute that to campaigns and, you know, pay lobbyists to go to Capitol Hill, the Hill, and get these laws, prevent laws requiring GMO labeling from being passed. The Clinton Foundation, this woman and her husband and her daughter have made lots of money and gotten donations from foreign governments and wealthy capitalists to the Clinton Foundation. I think it's called the Clinton Global Initiative. And they've been called into question for that as well. Because as Secretary of State, she was approving contracts that were being awarded to corporations that, guess what, had donated to the Clinton Global Initiative. You know? Acquiring all this tremendous wealth so she can pass it on down to her daughter and now her granddaughter, you know, through Chelsea Clinton and whatnot. Well, Chelsea works there. There was one article I was reading earlier today in my preparation that said this Canadian mining company up there in Canada was flying Bill Clinton around, giving him access to a luxury jet to travel around the world and, I guess, push policy and whatnot. And also donated huge amounts of money to the Clinton Global Foundation. Well, guess who sits on the board of that Canadian mining corporation? Hillary Clinton's brother. When Haiti had the earthquake and, for whatever dumbass reason, Haitians in government invited Bill Clinton over to come sit on the board and oversee the recovery efforts and award contracts to rebuild America. And Clinton, Hillary was there too as Secretary of State. And guess who got awarded a contract to mine that new gold deposits that they found in Haiti? That same very Canadian mining corporation that had been flying around Bill Clinton in his their luxury jet and donating money to the Clinton Global Foundation or initiative, whatever the name of it is. So I'm like, man, this is how the game is played. Anybody that denies it, if Hillary Clinton want to claim that these people was giving her all this money for no reason whatsoever, just cause they, you know, like her smile or something like that. Come on now. No, we are more intelligent than to believe some garbage like that. But apparently she don't think you are. Now, won't tie this into black people. First, I want to take a station identification break. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News, part of the Black Talk Radio Network, New Black Media for the New Millennium. Be right back.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Now, yesterday, I was on Facebook and came across my news feed, this article from 2012. Why people were sharing stuff from 2012, I don't know. Maybe they just, I don't know. I don't know what their motive was. But this was the article headline. What's Obama done for black people? Nothing. And that's the way it should be. Save the criticism for his policies that affect all Americans. Now, let me click through to this article. Now, I was like, let me go and read this before I comment on it. And thinking I got all the information. But they told me enough right there. As I stated at the beginning of the program. Who do you hear AIPAC? Do y'all know who AIPAC is? The American Israeli Political Action Committee. That all of these presidential candidates go down. I think it's in Florida where they be having their little conferences and whatnot. And all these presidential candidates come and they give speeches and try to convince these wealthy Jewish people why they should donate and fund their campaigns and just tell them how much they're going to do for Israel. You don't hear people saying that's wrong. Israel, you know, they ain't even Americans. Now, you're going to be loyal. Either you are American or you are Israeli. Which is it? Because it can't be both. All right. You're going to either be working for the interests of America, what's best interests of Americans, or you're going to be working in the best interests of the Israelis. Well, you got Americans going down there telling these Israelis, American Israelis, dual citizenship, telling them, oh, we're going to make sure Israel keeps getting this $1 billion a year welfare check. Even if it means we got to cut Americans off of food stamps and we got to, you know, raid Social Security. We're going to make sure Israel, there ain't nobody telling them, say the criticism for policies that affect all Americans, even though that is affecting Americans. Nobody telling the LGBT community and their organizations like the Human Rights Campaign, which endorsed Hillary Clinton. Human Rights Campaign is not about everybody's human rights. It's about the rights of gay people. And I believe no one should be mistreated. But nobody tells them, hey, save your criticism for these politicians that don't want to allow gays to openly serve in the military and thinks that they should. You know, nobody should ask them if they're gay, and they shouldn't be telling people that they're gay. You know, that was the Clintons. That was Bill Clinton. That's right when I got out the military. All right. Nobody's telling these gay people, hey, don't be going up there and interrupting President Obama and saying what you going to do for gay people and advance our agenda. Nobody's telling them that. They're not saying, say your criticism for his policies that affect all Americans. All right. Nobody telling them that. Nobody's telling the Tea Party, hey, Stop criticizing whatever Republican you're criticizing. Stop criticizing George Bush. Stop criticizing so-and-so. And save your criticisms for policies that affect all Americans. No, they're not. We don't see that. But let's go to TheRoot.com, which is owned by, I want to say, the Washington Times. It might be the Washington Post, since that's who also this writer has written for them as well. Let me see. I'm on their About Us page. See if they're going to tell the truth about who owns them. But this is information. Henry Louis Gates Jr., editor-in-chief of The Root. Let me see. Goes on, blah, 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 blah. Forget all that, all the accolades and all that kind of crap. Tell us who owns you. Tell us. That's what we want to know. Oh, they not sharing that information now. Maybe because it's been pointed out in the past and they trying to hide it. Let me see, because usually it'll tell you what the name of the company is. I'm not going to waste a lot of time, but just trust me. Trust me. The Root is owned by white people. It ain't owned by black people. Henry Louis Gates wasn't described as the owner. He was described as the editor-in-chief. All right? And they got all these black people writing for them and whatnot. But they are then telling black people, hey, save your criticisms for President Obama's policies and just focus on the stuff for that's affecting all Americans. All right? Everybody, this is what I'm talking about. The miseducation, the deliberate miseducation of black voters. Everybody knows this is how the game is played. You don't get nothing without contributing something. And then if you're going to contribute something, you better make your demands known or you're going to get nothing. Again, black people donated tremendous amounts of money collectively to elect President Obama. They did it as individuals. They didn't do it as a collective. They did not start an organization similar to the American Israeli Political Action Committee. They didn't start an organization like the American, American Legislative Exchange Committee, ALEC, which is funded by the Koch brothers, Walmart, a bunch of other big-time corporations, private prisons and whatnot. ALEC even gave seminars on legislation that they wrote. Now, they wrote this legislation. I'm talking about the private prisons. And through ALEC, they had these conferences inviting state lawmakers and federal lawmakers, giving them seminars how to go back and lie to people and convince them this is a good thing for us. This is a good thing for the people of America. It's going to save taxpayers money. And all that turned out to be a lie. And it was really about locking up as many black people as possible. Because, you know, we value black people when we can make money off of them as capital. And what better capital is there than captive, enslaved black people with that? We way behind, folks. We way behind. That's what Malcolm X and what is the scholar's name? He's John Henry Clark, I believe is his name. I want to say he was blind and whatnot. That's what they were starting back in the 60s with the Afro-American Organization for Unity, I want to say, if I recall correctly. OAU. OAAU, Organization for African American Unity. It's about pooling resources, getting our legislative agenda together, making demands on the politicians that we may donate to or whatnot. That is what James Clingman and Baba Amafika, I want to say, maybe I'm not pronouncing his name right, but when they started, 1 million, conscious black voters and contributors. That's what they're looking to do. I interviewed Mr. Kleeman several weeks ago about, you know, the need for that. And I'm a part of that, and I'm for that, and I support it. Okay? See, we ain't playing the game right. We think that we just, you know, and I would say that's probably the first time in history that black people collectively have given a whole bunch of money to see a politician elected, and they did it for the wrong reason. They did it because they just wanted to see a black face in the White House. They did it because of low self-esteem. And that is programmed into us since as little children. That's why we don't read about the black African revolutionaries, who this country would not even exist if not for them joining the Revolutionary War. You know, that's why we don't hear about people like Nat Turner in high school, because we don't want to be planting any rebellious ideals about freedom and liberty in the minds of black children. No, just teach them that they all were slaves. They all were just captured and beaten down and you know, were slaves, or that their history started with Martin Luther King, God Have a Dream speech and all of that. You know what I'm saying? That's the reason why we have low self-esteem. All right, many of us, not all of us, but many of us. It's because we don't have true knowledge of self. And so then we want to look for tokens. We want to look for tokens and people we could point to and say to white people, see, we just as good as you. We got a black president now, or we got a black secretary of state, or we got a black this and a black that. Don't matter who the hell these people might be working for, that question ain't even asked. Who else is giving these people money and why? But see, we're being programmed, not to. The masses are being programmed. That's why you get a proxy like this dude, what's this dude's name? David Swerdlick, who classifies himself as an African-American. He's a black man. I'm looking at his picture. He's a black man. But that's why you pay him to then write an article in a so-called black publication, when really it's a white publication targeting black people. That's why you get them to write an article to say that black people shouldn't be getting nothing from Obama. Say the criticism for his policies that affect all Americans. See, because you don't deserve nothing. Even though he wouldn't have been elected without you turning out in record numbers to vote for him, if you hadn't given money to help him create, you know, vast sums of a war chest, setting records and whatnot, oh, you ain't supposed to get nothing in return for that. What's the hell wrong with y'all people? You're just misbehaving, and why are you calling out the CEO? He's black. You can't be expecting nothing from him. See what I'm saying, man? This is why we losing. This is why we losing. Because we got black people lying to black people. Because we got black people telling us not to even participate in the game. Don't even make demands. Then he wants the name. You know, he going to say that. He going to point to somebody else's article and say, oh, this is what he did for black people. Now, he just sit up there and said, you know, we shouldn't be race specific. But here you go. Here's what the black president did for black people. And this is the main things he mentioned. He ramped up the Office of National AIDS Policy. I don't even know how that's affected us, because a lot of, you know, I don't believe that it's the majority of black people with AIDS or whatnot. But even so, did it cure AIDS? Did they come out with a cure or something? I don't know. What does the National AIDS Policy do? I don't know. He signed the Fair Sentencing Act into law. Let me tell you this. What he's not telling you, and something we told you on New Abolitionist Radio. Why he signed that into law, that was to reduce the crack cocaine disparity from 100 to 1 to 18 to 1. Behind the scenes, through the Justice Department, which he is the boss of those people over there, he had them then preventing people from getting out of prison, saying that, oh, this don't apply to you because you was locked up back then in the 90s, and this is just for people going forward. Man, all kind of hell had to be raised, all kind of arms had to be twisted to get them to make it retroactive for everybody. He was trying to limit who can get out because, you know, if you take all these slaves off the plantation is going to cease to be profitable. So this is why it is imperative that we inform ourselves. If we're going to be talking about politics, if we're going to be engaging in politics, if we're going to be talking about any aspect of the system, we got to understand what's going on politically, because politics control every people activity on the earth. There are laws regulating all that activity. Then he says, oh, he created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, you know, needed, arguably by black mortgage holders more than anyone. Well, let me ask you this. Did black people get their wealth back that they lost from these criminal bankers that we was just talking about earlier that didn't go to jail? That, you know, if I get caught with some coke, I'm going to jail. I get a prison record. I get felony status. Bankers like Goldman Sachs can engage in all this criminal activity in the financial markets, almost crash the entire global market. And then all they do is pay a fine. Even though they committed criminal acts, they just pay a fine, $5 billion fine Goldman Sachs paid, and then the CEOs are shielded from prosecution. How the heck did that help black people who lost their homes and stuff due to this crash and have not recovered it? And it is rightly being reported we have lost more collective wealth under President Obama than any other CEO in the history of USA Inc. How did that help us? And then let me point you to a recent information that came out about all these Democrats, black, white, working with Republicans to pass a law that this man signed that allows car industries to practice racism against black people. I'm talking about when you go to get a loan for a car. Y'all heard the story. I hope y'all heard the story. They just passed a law to make that legal, to where you could have the same credit score as as a white person, or theirs could be worse than yours. But they get the low interest loan where you get the high interest loan like you got bad credit or something. They just passed that into law. It's been talked about on this station on several programs. I remember Tanya Free and Friends were talking about this several weeks ago, about the Democrats working with the Republicans to pass this legislation that allowed them companies to get away with discrimination, racism in lending. It's time to wake up, man. If you're going to participate in politics, then you got to know how the game is played. What do they say? The squeaky wheel is the one that gets the oil. The person making the most noise gets the attention. And yet all we've heard for 7 years now, it ain't on him to do nothing for us. And you know, the Republicans up there, damn it, they work with the Republicans to pass other stuff. And there's things he could do as the chief executive officer that he don't even need them. And he ain't doing it. And why do we accept this? Because the vast majority of us are ignorant. And we don't know nothing about politics, and we just started participating here recently. Just because a black man was running for president, it looked like he may win. But then when it came time to elect senators and congressmen so that, you know, you keep the people in there that you think is going to pass laws for you, then, you know, you stay home and you don't turn out to vote. So anyway, pending revolution, until this is done away with, till this corrupt, evil system has been replaced, we're going to participate in any area of people activity. We got to learn to master it. And that's just the plain and simple truth about it. So I hope going forward to see the 1 million black voters and contributors, conscious black voters and contributors, I hope to see that, you know, become a success. So check them out at IamOneOfTheMillion.com and register and join so that we can create our own black lobby that's going to put pressure on the political system to pass the laws that we won't pass or to repeal the laws that we won't repeal. With that said, we come to a conclusion of the program. Recognize the fact that you live behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. It's Battlefield America out there. Casualties are being created every day. They always looking to catch a new slave for the new slave plantation. So in order to prevent that happening to you, develop codification, develop battlefield awareness, situational awareness, same thing, so that you don't become a victim. That's, you know, you got to take those steps, and we got to start being serious about what's going on. I will be back on air next Monday, 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Black Talk Radio Network. Peace and blessings to all.
They just hope that he'll never wake up because they never want to meet him on the battlefield.